How you feeling there, Dusty?
Oh, I'm feeling great, Nick. Good to be with you. Just effing around.
Just effing around. And I'll be honest with you. If I could tell the whole week this week just to F off, I think I would.
Has it been a rare week?
It's just been a rare week. Now, the good news is, ends on a positive. It's a Friday. I got the Medina County Fair tomorrow, weather permitting.
Okay. Yeah, what's weather looking like this morning?
Well, this morning already happened.
I mean, tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Because when I said that, I was thinking about this morning because I had a rare morning as well.
Yeah, we've had a rare week here.
Yeah, we have.
But can I tell you, because you and I both had rage-inducing moments today.
Yeah.
Mine, I had the most positive road rage experience ever.
So how so?
Why, thank you for asking.
I'd like to know.
So coming off 77, out yonder on East 14th, when you get to, that's like Carnegie right there, it's a no turn left there.
Yeah.
So you got to go straight. And once a week?
Yep. Twice a week?
I'm trying to be kind. At least once a week.
Where you don't lay on the horn because they're trying to be a jackass and turn left?
And by the way,
the old Pittsburgh left.
They don't turn their left on in advance.
Oh, the signal?
They wait till they get to the light.
Yeah. And well, not just get to the light, get into the middle.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so.
Been there.
Today, I had been vibing, all right?
What were you listening to?
I was listening to a little bit of John Prine. Oh, my God.
Oh, John Prine. That'll put you in a vibe.
It's just a good vibe. I was just coming off one of my favorite songs by a band out of Columbus, a country band. I've tried to turn you guys onto it, Camp. And I'd had this stressful week. I was vibing, man. I was in a good spot. And this son of a so-and-so pulls into the center of this the four-way there, and then hits his left turn signal, and then can go and doesn't go. And dude, I looked in the right lane. The truck behind me was trying to pull around me already. I whipped that wheel and I slammed on the gas. I whipped that thing and go by, eyes bulging out, like making it apparent that this person was the dumbest person I'd ever seen in that moment. And so I get like, you know, quarter mile down the road and I slow down. And a dude in another pickup truck pulls up next to me. And he's like, because we're both driving at like 10 miles an hour now. And he kind of rolled down the window. I'm like, uh-oh, here we go. And he's smiling, rolled down the window. He's like, man, that dude pissed you off. And I was like, they're always trying to turn left there. He's like, every time. He's like, you can't turn left there. And I was like, did we just become best friends? And honestly.
That's great, man.
So
it really is.
I get over to turn by the parking garage.
Yeah.
He gets behind me. I turn the parking garage. We wave at each other. I made a best friend in road rage. That's
amazing.
The best. Like the worst case scenario, you probably get shot. But the best case scenario, I never knew that this was possible. I never knew you could make a friend in road rage where you're both like, what a jerk. I almost went full on that one. What a jerk.
What were you going to say? What a D?
I was going to add another word beyond jerk. We're probably a step too far for our censors out there. So no, I feel great. That moment, I'm now like in full zen.
You embrace it, man.
Because wherever you are, friend in the truck, You drove next to the red truck and the guy who looked like he was someone. You made my day, friendo. That was good stuff right there.
About that.
But no, we got the Hall of Fame game. Boy, real football gets called after three quarters because of rain. Okay, I'm being insensitive. I want to make it clear because I've heard everybody's talked about my real football comments. I know it's not. I know it's truly real football. The same point.
I get what you're doing.
I just. It's like a step away from like the UFL, or it's like a step away from the XFL. And so
it's above the XFL and UFL.
Yeah, it is, but it's a step away.
Yeah, okay.
In the right direction towards the NFL.
Yeah, I mean a lot of those guys that played last night are going to be on rosters.
Yep. No. But they also a lot of those guys also playing will be in the UFL. There's or CFL or any of the FLs, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like. Kudos to you. I don't know how much time I could commit to it, but I want to make it clear because I always feel bad because, listen, I know Canton, Akron, Cleveland. I know there's like a big brother, little brother thing going on there. I got a lot of love for the city of Canton, and I got a lot of love for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and I've got a lot of love for that game. My quarrel is not with that game. My quarrel is that it's a preseason game. My quarrel is with preseason football.
I think it's a necessary evil, even though the people that keep saying that we don't need it are the people that are benefiting from money.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. But I think teams need the preseason to get ready to go. I mean, the games, I think they're overpriced and all that stuff. And, you know, the fans don't get, like, a chance to see a starter. Like, no starters played last night.
Yeah.
And I get that. But they play five preseason games, three rather now. But you get the point.
Listen, when we get to the Browns' first preseason game in just over a week, I am going to come away. I'm going to watch as much as I probably should watch of that, probably more. And I am going to come away with takeaways. You just mentioned something that I do think is at the core of what disgusts me, is that season ticket holders, and this is not exclusive, again, to the Hall of Fame game, because that is a game in and of itself outside of everything else, kind of chaps my ass that you know, if you want to buy Brown season tickets, you got to pay for the preseason. It does.
Yeah, it's part of the deal, man.
Yeah, I know, but I just think it's thievery, and every team in the NFL does it, and it's and we all kind of
just like let people have those. If you're a season ticket holder, just get those tickets for free. I mean, you can charge for the other seats.
Yes, honestly,
if you don't have season tickets, then okay, then you spend whatever $38 to go.
Charge more for the other ones. Do what is it? Surge pricing. Charge more for the regular season ones, and these ones are free. And I know there's really no difference in the price. Believe me, it feels very different getting three preseason games, which you don't want to go to for free, and then paying.
I actually like going to the preseason games.
Why?
It's a much tamer environment. It's a great kid-friendly environment. It's a totally different vibe. No one's pissed off if they lose the game. Like, it's just a really relaxing environment.
You know, it's funny you say that, dude.
Game tickets last night were like $10 to go. Mm-hmm. I had some buddies that had gone and took their kids, and they said it was amazing.
So I usually park back here, so I do the full walk back from Brown Stadium to here to my car. And I gotta say, I mean, there's like pockets of bleep this guy, bleep that guy, but mostly I think we take losses incredibly well in this town. And like, some of my favorite conversations with people have been after losses, where we're kind of like, how the hell did that happen? You know, like even last year when the playoffs are on the line, and it's like, but like you're starting like DTR or you're starting PJ Walker, and you're like, did we really almost win that game? Like, and how did we almost lose it? And like, so it's funny.
We have a really good punter.
I don't feel like I know if you go to certain tailgates, like whoever runs it, that's going to judge the tone and timbre of like whether it's a good atmosphere. But like, maybe I'm just super lucky, and I you know, we have our own tailgate thing going on. You know, the Top Dog tailgate, I'm always over there. Those guys are so nice and so awesome. I've just never had a negative thing at a Browns game. Going to it, traveling to it. Like, I just, maybe I'm Pollyanna about it, but so my thing is, I think the thing that would bug me about going to preseason games and doing the same thing I do with the regular seasons, which I don't, I treat it completely different. I tend to not go to preseason games. I tend to more just watch them from home. But my thing with it is, I would miss those tailgates if they're not there. You know what I mean? Because, again, not everybody treats it like a regular season game, so... Like, part of the reason I don't go is I don't get to see my friends. I've never had, like, I've seen fights before. And, like, maybe it'd be different because, like, dude, I'll be honest with you, I am so protective of my family. And I'm the biggest teddy bear in the world. I can't even come up with the circumstances to get me in a situation where I think, I'm 38. I'm not swinging, you know, fisticuffs anymore. But same point. I could understand if there were people fighting around me and one of them knocks into my kid, that I could see myself. And maybe that would change my feelings on going to games. I just have never had it, man. I've been so blessed. But yeah, bleep the preseason because of what it does to the fans out there who work super damn hard for their money. Oh, by the way, the Garters are back. Not that they ever left, but the Guardians are back. This is like Texas in Miami. Are the Guardians back? 216-474-0092. That was a fun game last night.
That was one for the ages.
That's a kick the holy crap out of them game.
It's fun to score 10 runs.
Well, and I got to be honest with you, because the Tanner Bibee thing came out early in the day. Ben Lively going out there and probably having his best start of the season, actually making it through six full innings. That helped. I mean, you got Cookie tonight, weather permitting, but you got Cookie tonight. All right. Well, it's so funny because I know people don't think about this, but I was thinking like last night, man, if you win on that first game, it just takes the pressure off tomorrow night.
Oh yeah.
And maybe that helps Cookie have his first good start in about 3 or 4 or 10 starts. But so the Guardians, so just on the record, because we're an honest show. All right. We are
very
the narrative setters in Cleveland. I got to make sure this is okay with social media as well. I've checked. I mean, I've sent texts to 25 different local media members to make sure this is an okay question to ask, because I just want to make sure that everybody agrees with what we're doing today. Are the Guardians back? Yes or no, Dustin Fox?
Are they back?
Yeah, don't you dare put a poll up on it, Keith. Don't you do that. What'd you say there?
Where'd they go? Are they back?
Yes. That's what I asked
you. Okay, they're back.
Ha, there we got it. Look at that.
Easy.
That's how you start an F off Friday.
That's right.
We're just answering questions and creating our narratives, and nobody else's narratives matter because we're the voice of Cleveland. Now, one more here. We had Albert Breer on yesterday. Keith, is this a 2-minute clip?
Oh, it's a little over a minute.
Okay. So then we're actually going to hold it till we come back here. But we didn't get to get into this next part that we're going to have, this next conversation we're going to have yesterday, because Albert was on at 5:20. We immediately bounced back with the guys from the booth from the game last night, and then pretty much the show was over. But we asked Albert a question about off-season additions by the Cleveland Browns, and I've thought about his answer on the biggest Browns off-season addition or which one was bigger. Pretty much since he said it yesterday, I've been chomping at the bit. We're going to get to that in this first hour here. Albert Breer was with us yesterday, and occasionally this happens where we have so many things we're trying to do before the end of the show that we don't get to react to everything Albert gave us. And I can't remember if it was Dusty or me. We asked the question about off-season acquisitions, as Mike Vrabel seems to be the hit of camp. He seems to be in every video. The Browns have made him available, and Albert even kind of acknowledged yesterday how unusual that was, and then got into whether Vrabel or Jerry Jeudy was the best offseason acquisition this year.
I think the difference between that and the acquisition of Jerry Jeudy is, you know what you're getting with Vrabel, right? Like, you can kind of have him do whatever you need him to do on a day-to-day basis, and he can be a great resource for you. Where with Jerry Jeudy, it's a little bit of like, all right, this is a swing for the fences, and we'll see what it becomes. Now, you might find out that, you know, the injury problems persist, and he's not much more than he was in Denver, or he becomes what we all thought he was going to be when he was a, you know, top 20 pick 4 years ago. And, you know, I know the Browns really felt good about Jerry Jeudy when they traded for him, and that getting him around Amari Cooper should help, because Amari Cooper's got a very similar background to him. South Florida guy, Alabama guy that, you know, that Jerry really looked up to. And so, you know, you're swinging for the fences with him, and it could wind up being a great value. And a guy who, you know, I know when he was coming out, like, one of the comps I got on him was Marvin Harrison, senior, not junior, right? Like, that he could be that sort of receiver. If you get that out of him, obviously it's going to be a better acquisition, but it's a little bit more of a hit or miss than Vrabel is.
So I think that's interesting. I do think we have very strong expectations for Jerry Jeudy, and that it's easier for Jerry Jeudy to not live up to those expectations because he's a player and we're going to see every single thing he does. But I continue to come back to this idea. Mike Vrabel, as a consultant, brilliant idea. And I do think that there are a lot of ways intangibly that he can help, and probably already has. There's no way he can have a bigger impact on the Browns this season than Jerry Jeudy. Unless Jerry Jeudy doesn't play this year.
Because Jerry Jeudy's actually on the field?
Yes, yes. I'm trying to think of like the other big additions. I mean, that Jerry Jeudy kind of was it. Jordan Hicks, your new middle linebacker. As long as Jordan Hicks plays for most of the season, he's going to have more impact on how this thing goes one way or another than Mike Vrabel.
Yeah.
And that's not to disrespect Vrabel, because I think you're seeing Browns fans react to Vrabel, and I think that's really awesome. And I think it's a good thing for him. I think it's a good thing for the Browns. I think it's a brilliant idea by Kevin and Andrew.
Kevin.
But, like, for Jerry Jeudy to not have – to not end up as the bigger acquisition. How about this? If Jerry Jeudy is just who he was in Denver, he's still a bigger addition than Mike Vrabel. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can't really quantify, like, what Vrabel means to this team, because yeah. he's not a position coach. He's not a coordinator.
He's not the head coach.
Not the head coach. I mean, you don't even understand or know how much impact he's going to have on the team. I mean, he's got the bigger name. He's got the better track record for what he does for his specific job. But if you ask me if I'd rather have Tom Brady or have Bill Belichick, give me Brady all day. Like, the player has an impact on the game.
And I think what's interesting is Albert's not the only person saying Vrabel as the better offseason acquisition than Jeudy. But I think that speaks a lot to the perception of players.
Yeah.
And the worst thing you can be perceptionally is you didn't live up to your draft status. I think that's a huge part of this. If you actually look at the average raw numbers of Jerry Jeudy, there's a lot of good there. There's not a lot of great there, although certainly his ability to separate, his ability to make plays down the field, there actually are some like key things that will tell you, hey, this could be really special. But what I can't figure about with the Jerry Jeudy thing is, why we talk about this guy like you moved heaven and earth to get him. I don't know if it's the contract extension, which people most certainly didn't like. I don't know if it's that people were expecting T. Higgins and they got Jerry Jeudy. And to this point, those are the production level of those two players is very different. But like when it comes back down to it, this idea that the only way Jerry Jeudy is going to be successful or a successful acquisition is if the guy becomes, I don't know, Amari Cooper with ridiculous speed. You gave up fifth and sixth round picks for him. And I mean,
he didn't give up a ton.
It's almost like we've started with a negative mentality on Jerry Jeudy. And this is not just a Cleveland thing. Like, it's football has a negative opinion of Jerry Jeudy because he hasn't been worth the 15th pick in the 2020 NFL draft yet. And Mike Vrabel, nobody can believe this guy didn't get a head coaching job. He's incredibly impressive. And he's in a great role that's very visible. So it's like it's a battle of perception. Maybe one of the most popular members of the Browns, like 4 months into being hired, 6 months into being hired, Mike Vrabel, and a guy who I think people are like, well, I'll like Jerry Jeudy when he earns it.
There's a lot of people out there like that.
Yeah.
And I think it's just the contract.
Which is wild. They didn't pay him.
No, but it's a big number. It's like a sticker shock for fans who are like, oh, that's kind of a big number for a guy who's done nothing.
So he's outside the top 20 in almost every major category contractually. Now, 2 years from now, when, by the way, Amari's going to get paid again, when T. Higgins is going to get paid, when all these other guys are going to get paid, within a year, he could be outside the top 30 in those key metrics with the amount of wide receivers that are going to get paid. Because here, by the way, I mentioned the guys that should get paid that money. There's going to be guys that have no business getting paid that money that get paid more than Jerry Jeudy. So
I understand that.
Like, and it's
the goal behind the contract was to get him basically early. You're kind of betting that he's going to become, you know, something that is, I don't know if he's number one, but like a legitimate number two.
So, you paid him like a number two receiver. I think if you look at the contract, and again, in a year, that's probably going to be outside the top 30 in all the major contractual things for wide receivers. You basically paid him like who he was in Denver. Because if you're not one of the top 32 wide receivers, you're getting paid like the 30. You got paid like a number two receiver. By the way, that's if all you do is you average out what he was in Denver. And I know consistency is a huge problem, but I wonder if some of this is also blowback on Elijah Moore, where I think we had such high expectations for Elijah. Real quick, Jax, did you just almost vomit on the board? I'm sorry here. I look over, and Jax clearly has a gigantic belch going on. And I saw him.
Did he hold it in?
He stifled it. He held it in. Are you okay?
About you, man?
I'm completely fine, yeah.
All right, because we just had the reverse situation when I came on air. I drank too much water right before I went on air and had to stifle it. And Jax looked at me like, are you okay? And at mid-sentence, I look over and I see Jax just go, I'm like, okay, all right, okay, we can get back to the show. I have no idea. I think some of this is because of Elijah Moore not panning out last year in a very similar deal.
Yeah, I mean, Elijah was what, a second round pick?
It was a two for Elijah and a third.
I'm saying he originally was a second round pick.
Yeah.
Drafted high with a lot of potential, didn't pan out, and he hasn't done anything here. I mean, made a couple plays.
So I feel like you've answered this already, but the burp gate over here has completely thrown me off.
Do you want me to chime in about some burps?
What's going to be the bigger offseason? When we get through this season, what are we going to look back and go, that's the thing that made or almost didn't make the season, Vrabel or Jeudy?
I think it depends who you are.
Is it because I made too good of an argument against Mike Vrabel that now you feel guilty if you take Mike Vrabel?
It was a good argument.
Because I feel like most people are in the camp of Vrabel. And I think that has a lot more to do with our, and it should. Every time I hear that dude talk, I'm like, that's a head coach. And I think there are people out there rooting he'll be the next Ohio State head coach. I guarantee there are people in town who would take him over Kevin Stefanski right now, which I think is
insane,
crazy.
Insane, asinine.
Yeah. Like, most years we could do the Vrabel or Brown's existing head coach, and it's a very
valid.
Yeah,
I mean, any head coach
now they've
had since they've been back, you'd take Vrabel over.
Yeah, but it's not, you can't have it now because you were just in the playoffs.
Like, listen, if Stefanski had a rough season this year,
mm-hmm.
And Vrabel's still here, yeah, okay, then we'll take the calls.
Oh,
and I'm not even saying that it's even a potential thing that could happen, Nick, but people will say that after this year. My point is, to even think that now, you're an idiot.
I think, but here's the thing. I wasn't O-manning that you're wrong. If the Browns start 1-4, I don't know if it's a loud minority or if they're just loud in general, whether it's going to be the same people that now think, you know, Stefanski's overrated for some reason, but like, because it's not going to matter. It's not like Jimmy's going to hear Chuck in Medina County call in and be like, I think you should make Vrabel the head coach, and be like, candidly, I'll think that's right. Sorry, Jimmy, I don't have a good Haslam. But the point is, it's not going to, but it
that
is.
That was your Haslam? Let me hear it one more time.
Candidly, I think he was right. It's a lot
Forrest
of fog.
Gump.
I was thinking Foghorn Leghorn, and none
Same
of it's
difference.
Good. It's very, very unintentionally disrespectful to folks from the South, and I apologize immediately. I can do better to all the Haslams.
And you will.
To Jimmy, to D, Cletus, all of them. That's on me, dog.
That's the one.
Well, hear me out on this one, though. Like, for the people that are not saying Mike Vrabel, and maybe it's you guys, and obviously if Jerry Jeudy puts up 1,000 yards, this is a non-conversation. Like, mm-hmm. That would mean that he played well, Deshaun played well, everything. But Mike Vrabel coming in, as Albert said, it's basically like having an extra head coach or coordinator. He's been working with the tight ends and David Njoku. He's been working with Bubba Ventrone with the special teams. So his presence can be felt in a lot of different places. Has just the thought that you guys and probably everybody else assumes that he's only going to be here for 1 year, does that play into it? Because his impact, if he's only here for 1 year, could still be big, but you feel like that kind of drops off if he's just gone after the season.
No, not really. If he was a coordinator, I'd probably be answering this differently.
Right, but
it's the fact that his job is pretty nebulous, and like, I'm not saying there's not value, but like, I can 800 yards is worth more to me on the field from Jerry Jeudy than this kind of generic idea of, I worked with David Njoku.
Yeah, I mean,
David Njoku's still the guy that's got to go out there and play the football.
I get that. Production over everything, but the fact is, like, he could be helping put game plans together based on his experience as a defensive guy with the offense now, or vice versa. Like, he could be assisting Jim Schwartz in those areas. Like, I think we can't overlook the game plan part of things. That's Ken Dorsey. He's not even calling plays, but they switched offensive coordinators because they're going to install different offense or different variations of the offense.
So what's more valuable? An elite game planner, meaning somebody that can help you, he's not making the game plans. He's just helping make the game plan. Or a average level wide receiver, way, which is what I think we call like a number two wide receiver.
Yeah, say if he's helping the tight ends or any other part of the offense, that in turn might be helping Deshaun.
I'll still take. I don't, maybe it's because I watched like Cindric Steptoe be the number two wide receiver for half a season. Maybe it's because I've seen what like below average replacement player means to you on the field when you had a bunch of really bright like football guys. Like Romeo was your head coach, and that was the Chudzinski year, and then you had Mel Tucker. Like you had a bunch of football lifers. It didn't matter when Cindric Steptoe was your number two wide receiver.
Oh, that's a throwback.
Had to when Steve Sanders, who we love, Bowling Green's finest fellow Ivy Leaguer, when yeah. Steve Sanders like, was your number
guy.
When he was your number three wide receiver, it didn't matter who was game planning. Like that at least at that point in his career. I'm now just adding a racer phrase because I feel immediate Falcon on Falcon slander, which is unFalcon believable here on a F off Friday. But no,
are you Falcon around?
I'm almost always doing so as an Ivy League.
Thoughts?
So Keith actually put this poll out yesterday after we talked. I think it was in advance to the show. So, I mean, it stayed up for more than 24 hours. And it was who is the bigger offseason addition for the Browns. Let's say 600 votes. I'm actually surprised by this, that 57% of people agree with me. And Kevin on Twitter saying, any personnel member who will not be there on game day or have any game day duties will never be more important than a between the lines player. Never. The only playoff win in the Kevin Stefanski era came with him in his basement. This town is nuts. And then our buddy Chip pointing out, fellow Buckeye, by the way, pointing out that Vrabel said in his presser that he'd be watching next week's opponents during the season.
Okay.
So
I missed that.
If he had
apologies.
A game day role, if you saw Vrabes on the sideline and he's in there, he's just nits and grits with your favorite players. He's challenging Jameis Winston to a foot race in the middle of a game. Would that change the value perspective for you? I feel like you just want to save Vrabel, but you don't want to.
I mean,
you don't want to get jammed up by me.
I just think that it depends on who you ask after the season as to how much Vrabel gets, how much credit he gets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one will really be able to quantify how much value he brought, but if the Browns make a run or you start seeing stuff, they start throwing to Myles Garrett in the red zone.
Yeah.
You know
if they do anything cool,
anything
creative,
like that, oh God, it's going to go all on Vrabel's plate.
You know what's funny about that is Kevin Stefanski has done that stuff, and it's
yes.
been the stuff that people have bitched about for 4 years.
Oh yeah.
I can't believe he called that aggressive play there. I wouldn't have done that with this guy, but because Mike Vrabel's on the staff, It's just going to get like, well, it must be Vrabel doing it. That's totally because he's from here, right?
Yes.
Exact same qualifications. What he did at Ohio State, what he did at... Actually, no. NFL player, Super Bowl player, had coached at Ohio State, but hadn't played at Ohio State. What he did in Tennessee, but he's from Kentucky. And he went to the University of Kentucky. Are we as bad out of hell in love with Mike Vrabel and giving him the kind of credit?
No.
So is it because he's from here or is it because he's a Buckeye?
It's probably more both. Like, dude went to high school in this area, also went to Ohio State, was a superstar, played in the league forever, all the championships. And then, I mean, the guy's just really won everywhere he's been his whole mm-hmm. life. The guy's just a winner, flat out.
So it's interesting. What's won me over with Vrabel is just that he's a bit of a meathead. Because we've talked about, and I do think, listen, if they struggle at all this season, there's going to be the Vrabel calls. And there's nothing we can do about it. And the best we can do is take the call and be like, come on. Like, look what Kevin has done. Let's not forget what he's done. Let's be patient here. Same time. Mike Vrabel looks and acts a lot more like a head coach than what our ideal is of a head coach. Let me make sure that than Kevin.
Kevin doesn't necessarily look like what you would think is a typical head coach.
One, he's too good looking. I think that.
Well, there's that, and he just Yeah, it's probably just the good looking. Yeah, well, like, he's just awesome.
And then his personality. So to me, it's actually more about his personality.
Yeah.
I can even get frustrated with it. Like when they're struggling and he refuses to say anything of merit, I get frustrated with that stuff too. It doesn't mean I want him fired, but like you can say blibbity blobbity blue if you're 13-4. You cannot say that if you're 4-13.
Correct.
And what Vrabel does really, really well, and it's not a lost art because it's a personality thing. Football guys, I feel like, when I say football guys, I'm talking about dudes who are a little bit meathead. I'm not talking Dan Campbell level and, you know, kneecap biting sons of guns. I'm talking about like just the Schottenheimers, who are really, really intelligent guy, but also was no BS. Yeah, no, that guy didn't do this. He's out. Don't care. We got a way to doing things, either conform or get out. There's really no difference in successful coaches in terms of how they handle that stuff. It's just whether they externalize it. And I've never felt like I've gotten coach speak for Mike Vrabel. And I do think that's something that people like here. I think it's why everybody took the bait with Freddie Kitchens. I think that's why every once in a while I'll still hear somebody be like, man, how different would it be if Greg Williams had been the head coach? Well,
yeah, be very different.
It'd be very different, but I don't know it'd be as good. I think that part of the thing really does matter with Mike Vrabel. So while we have Ben McDonald coming up here, I wanted to throw this by you. I wanted to ask you about it when it first happened. Jackson Holliday, who you should see again tonight at shortstop, he's the number one prospect in all of baseball, was up, made his major league debut earlier this year. At one point had a 0.077 batting average, which 77 batting average isn't good, by the way, just in case you guys are out there.
0.077?
Yeah. I know we're not allowed to say batting average anymore, but it's not good.
What would your batting average be?
Less than that. It would be 0.00. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, but here I am. However, he came back, and in his first game back earlier this week, he hit a home run. And I got to say, kudos to the Orioles, to Jackson Holliday, and to the little to the family. It was a dad and son that caught the home run ball.
Awesome.
They had a really good moment. That basically, Jackson did a meet and greet, and there was an exchange there of a signed baseball bat and a meet and greet for the baseball. Does it change? Does your reaction, one, would you do the same thing? Would you be a cheap date if you caught some sort of important milestone home run from a player? Would you be a cheap date? Would you just basically not even ask for anything, just take what you're given?
I would take what I was given, probably.
Now a lot more.
It depends who it is.
You know, I think that's a great point, because all right, Jackson Holliday's first home run, that could have incredible value in the future. Like, that ball could be worth a lot of money if that kid goes out there and becomes a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he's just hauler really freaking good. He has like 350 home runs. That ball could be very, very valuable. At the same point, and so could the bat, right? So, like, you get a signed bat from the kid. He gets the memento that probably matters to him.
Yeah.
It's a fair trade. If it's Mark McGwire's 71st home run, Or 62nd home run, I kind of feel like you're running a different gambit there.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you.
And I'll be honest with you, I hate that this is true. I tend to think that I am enough of a people pleaser and a pushover that I would just, what do you think is fair? In any circumstances, I would probably be the guy who turns down like a $1 million offer or doesn't even go to find out how much it's worth. Because there would be such a guilt built in for me, I'd feel like such a prostitute. I would, and like I was turning tricks for this incredible moment in history. The same point, the first home run, I don't think you drive a hard bargain. The milestone, I caught it was a ground rule double, and it was Stephen Kwan hit for the it was the hit that took him to the longest hit streak in baseball history.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal.
You're going for the moon, right?
Hell yeah.
I think most people would.
Yeah, I mean, what if you I'm just trying to think, like, somebody recent, like a Jeter.
But what about somebody who's not historically overrated?
Not historically. No, I understand. You're an idiot. And Keith wants to jump in on that.
By the way, the Jeter thing, I totally understand that you found the ball that I would hold hostage.
You keep that one.
No, I just say, all right, you want Jeter's last home run ever? You want Jeter's 400th home run, which he never hit 400 home runs because he's overrated. You want the home run ball to go ahead in Game 7 of the World Series or Game 7 of the ALDS? Cool. It's going to cost you. I'm going to need seven figures here. That might be the one. The player matters. Now that you're saying it, the player totally matters.
Oh, yeah.
I'm such a pushover in so many instances. If I hated the team, it's the Yankees. I hate that team.
Anybody for the Yankees?
Anybody for the Yankees.
Okay.
If it was, I actually kind of, I like watching Aaron Judge. He's good. He's a great slugger. I know he's a great player. He's a great slugger. His 500th home run, I'm holding hostage.
Yeah.
The pitchers aren't the same because you don't get somebody accidentally throws me the ball. The final out from Garrett Cole's 200 wins, because we're now, that's as far as any of these pitchers are going to get, because we only pitch him five innings tonight. If I accidentally get thrown that, I'm probably holding it hostage.
Okay. You're one of those guys.
Yeah, but only if it's somebody I really dislike. 216-474-0092. Jackson Holiday exchanged a signed bat and a meet and greet. It was actually a really sweet moment. It was really cool. The Orioles did kind of capitalize on it by putting it on social media, which makes it feel a little cheaper.
Yeah.
A little cheaper, but it was a very sweet moment. The kid was so excited. Jackson seems like a nice guy.